This is the Digital Savage Experience Podcast, hosted by Roman Prokopchuk, bringing you all things digital marketing, tech, business, and motivation. What's stopping you from becoming relentless in all aspects of life? Are you ready to become a digital savage? Let's get into today's episode.
Hey everyone, this is Roman Prokopchuk, and this is the Digital Savage Experience Podcast. Today I have with me Damian White. He's a writer from Columbus, Ohio. He is the author of the poetry book, I Made a Place for You, which is his debut collection. After battling two bouts with homelessness, he channeled those experiences into poetry as a way to heal a fractured identity. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
My pleasure. So tell me a little bit about your journey. How did you get to where you are today?
Sure. So it was definitely a winding road. I guess if we go back to my identity as a student, since I was a kid, I was always the A plus. I wanted to work extra hard, you know, like teacher's pet kind of kid, where I was rewarded in my household for having good grades and for getting scholarships and for kind of like advancing in the way that like everyone saw and agreed upon as like success for like a teenager. So in high school, I did well. I went to a great college. And then I graduated from college and went to grad school for 2 years. I was in a PhD program and I decided I didn't want to be a professor. I think that when the curtain came back and I saw like what the lifestyle looked like, I like to give the example of like, if you ever watch the show House, for instance, like, you know, it looks so glamorous. He just kind of walks in, does his thing, like, so, you know, draws some stuff on the whiteboard. And then like all of a sudden he figured it out. But when I was shadowing doctors, for instance, in college, you're like, they don't show you the 6 hours of notes they have to take. They don't show you all the behind the scenes, like medical records they have to skim through and all the, they don't show you all that part. They just kind of show you the ER glamorized, like fast paced side. And I think that that kind of mentality carried over to what I thought becoming a teacher would be. Oh, I'll have sabbaticals and I'll get to win grants and go do work and wherever I want, like kind of have this like, it's kind of hip, almost hippie-ish lifestyle in a sense if you do it right. Like if you're publishing papers and writing, and I was interested in that. But what I found was that my creativity was being stifled in that program because the way that you have to write to publish in academic journals is very rigid and structured. And there's a kind of formula to it. And that contradicts how I write my poetry. And so I wasn't finding space for both of those things. And I was just deciding that the life I saw for myself about 5 or 6 years down the road that I could literally see in front of me because I'm shadowing these people and these people have the jobs that I was saying that I want, you know, like this is what it looks like. So the mystery was the mystery went away. And I think after that went away, I just decided it wasn't for me. So I ended up homeless shortly after that a few times. And the last time was in San Francisco around 2015. That's when I came back home. So shortly within that time, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I had lost my job. I refused to come back home. And for me, getting away from home was such an important part of high school. You know, like I couldn't wait to get away from home. So I carried that kind of desire to like push home away because I felt like that was the only way I could grow and become independent and not be so reliant on my mom or my grandma or my aunt or anything like that. And when I was homeless, that kind of stubbornness was stuck in the back of my head. So like I wouldn't go home no matter how many times my mom said, hey, like we can get you home. I threw my phone in the ocean, you know, instead of coming home, I was like, I don't even want anyone to be able to talk to me. And so when I finally got to my breaking point and decided I had to come back home, was when I really realized that I had to write this book because I was facing death several times during my stint homeless. And I felt like I hit the plateau point where it's like, if you don't make this change now, you're never going to see this bucket list item that you've been telling people your whole life you're going to do. Like I always said, I wanted to see my name on the spine of a book on my own bookshelf. And I realized that like, if I was ever in another situation like that, then I wouldn't get to see those things. And I feel like coming that close to like feeling like your life is over, it was just a very like, it was a big revelation for me. And so I turned it into this book.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's a long-winded answer, but
yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of people have like a trajectory or a desired path, but when they really get into it or see it, they don't necessarily, you know, see that it's for them. I mean, everybody in any career or anything worthwhile, obviously there's kind of blood, sweat, and tears, and you don't see, like, I mean, there's like an analogy or a picture of like an iceberg. So like of success, you see the iceberg, the top of it, but the bottom under the water is like the biggest part, where it's like all the, you know, sleepless nights, everything else that has to go in kind of paying your dues, or, you know, whatever career you're in. I was originally going to be, go into the Marine Corps as an officer after college. I was a criminal justice major, and I interned with the Secret Service. I thought I wanted to do that, but I saw the kind of lifestyle they lived. They would have to switch post every 2-3 years. It was very political and bureaucratic. So if like the director of an office doesn't like you for your like next assignment, they'll send you to like, you know, Fargo or like, you know, Anchorage, Alaska, where there's like three other people in the office, and, you know, your career is kind of dictated by other people. So regardless of what, you know, somebody does, I feel like it's important at that time in the beginning of the process to save a lot of like grief and heartache, and, you know, go down a path where, you know, you're going to be stressed out, you potentially going to be, you know, depressed, anything else, to kind of save that. And, you know, a lot of people also kind of, you know, stand on their 2 feet. Like you said, you left home, you didn't want to come back. You know, you had the opportunity to, but you just kind of wanted to cut that. I mean, a lot of people have that. And I don't necessarily think it's pride. It's just like, you know, you had an idea of what you wanted to do, and it's, you wanted to accomplish something for yourself. Because, I mean, what I've been doing, like, in my career wise since then, it was like completely self-made. It's completely pivoted into marketing. Somebody just gave me an opportunity, handed me something from a truck, a packet about search engine optimization, and I kind of ran with it. So I think it's important. And, you know, the fact that you wrote something and it was a, you know, a therapeutic exercise for you as well, I think a lot of people, you know, utilize that. Obviously, a lot of people don't publish it, but, you know, they'll journal or write something down what they're feeling. And even something as simple as, you know, writing down a goal, now it comes out of your mind, and then you can see it, and it becomes more real.
Yeah, and I think like getting the stuff that's inside was super important. Like getting it out was important for me, because, you know, like I sit around and I hear people telling the same, it's like same sad stories from 15 years ago. You know, like you can go to any room. It doesn't, I truly believe this. You can go in any room, and it will be less than 10 minutes before you hear someone telling some woe is me story. And that's just how life is. We like that. We commiserate in that for whatever reason. But for me, I felt like there's no way I can sit and dwell in these terrible feelings. It was like the pit of the stomach kind of feeling. Like, why would you want to rekindle that, relive that over and over again? So writing just happened to be the way. I mean, there are other ways. I love music. I love watching movies. I found my ways to get out of running that recurring movie in my head over and over again of just like what it was like to be out there, and like how disappointed I was in myself, and what could people have been thinking, and all of like, how do people see me now? You could just go down the rabbit hole of that forever. And I've seen it in like even older people who still, I feel like, never got out of that. And I just never wanted to be that person. And whether or not this book was going to be the, you know, the way out completely, I didn't know, but I knew that was going to help for sure.
Yeah. A lot of people are stuck in a rut or dwell on the past and kind of use things as excuses. I mean, you can use pain, tragedy, anguish to either propel you or to kind of keep you down, and use it as a crutch. Well, you know, I'm this way because of X, you know, or Y. You know, I turned to alcohol and drugs because, you know, I was abused as a child. But I mean, it's like one of those things. Ultimately, like, it's interesting because I've had a few instances where it's like two siblings and they've been through some trauma, and one, you know, is locked up for, you know, 20 years for something, you know, a felony of some sort. And the other one is a successful entrepreneur, an author, or philanthropist. And why do people kind of make those choices? And at what point do they say, hey, I'm going to make this decision for myself? So, you know, it's ultimately a choice, and it's easier said than done, because oftentimes people you know, get into a dark part of their life and it's hard to get out. And ultimately you can have like all the support system that you want, but ultimately you need to dig yourself out of that.
Yeah. You probably listen to Gary Vee, I'm sure. Like he has this saying where he said, like, you know, don't build your own prison, you know, basically like we build our own prisons. And I use this, I say that all the time just because I'm thinking like, okay, if I want to go downstairs and tell my mom at dinner, there's, you know, another sad, cause I have a gazillion stories I could tell from just that 3 months of time. And I don't rehash those, you know, I don't go over to my mom's house or ask my wife if she wants to hear about this thing that happened in the alley that one time. I just don't do it. And I feel like it took a long time for me to get to the place where I felt like I didn't need to do that. Like part of it was like, you feel like that's helping justify, you know, giving people more context is helping justify, when really, I don't think that's what people need. I feel like people need to see me come out of it on the other side. They need to see me like positive, happy. If I'm happy and I'm good, then what are you going to still be like worried about how I'm doing for, you know, like you see me doing well. So like, I think that like, when I finally realized that that was actually the best play, then all of that, just like, it's like when you have all the pieces in front of you to make your dinner, you're like, you're looking at it, you're like, all you gotta do is stir it up and turn the oven on. That's how I felt. I'm like, I have all this information and I know what I need to do. So it was just about like getting the wheels turning. So.
Yeah. I think ultimately it's, you know, a you versus you battle, and, you know, you kind of enter this world by yourself and you leave it by yourself. And, you know, along the way, unfortunately, life isn't easy, and things in life that matter and how you, you know, go about them and how you earn them, the process isn't, you know, easy. Anything in life worthwhile isn't, you know, an easy endeavor. And eventually everybody's going to have a story like that. You know what I mean? I mean, in the last 3 years, I've lost, you know, close family members, you know, going through miscarriage with my wife, and, you know, fostering 29 kids. But I think taking the positives out of it, using it as, you know, stepping stones for advocacy or bringing about change instead of complaining about it, I think is important, like you mentioned. So we can sit and dwell and, you know, this happened to me, that happened to me. Okay, why not just come out of it, and why not do something that helps people, you know, deal with a similar situation that you went through and how to cope and how to heal, or help people avoid situations, or, you know, learn from, you know, your mistakes, you know, or your journey as well. So it's kind of like being a benefit and a resource for people, or just, you know, staying stagnant in this part of life. Because if you don't get past that, it's going to affect whatever it is, every aspect of your life. It's just going to kind of, you know, drain you, and, you know, it's kind of take you out of your element. And then you not only suffer, but, you know, those around you as well.
For sure. And it's harder. It's even harder for people who are at those low points themselves. And like, right, you know, right now, like if you're at that point now, like, you know how hard it is to get out of bed, you know how hard it is to eat, you know how hard it is to want to be around people. And like, so yeah, it's super tough. And I think that like, that's just why it's so important for me. Like I had a mindset shift, for instance. Like, I like something you just said, like, instead of saying I have to help my mom move this weekend, I get to help my mom move this weekend. Right. And that small thing, it's like, one of them is gratitude. Right. So I get to is the gratefulness part of it. I have the opportunity to spend the entire day helping my mom set up her new house, as opposed to like, oh man, I got to spend my whole day like getting sweaty and moving boxes up and down the stairs. It's like, no, like, and those things, like, I don't know how to tell people like how to get to that point. That's like where, that's where I want to like go. I want to figure out like, how do I like help people get to the point where you start to flip these switches in your mind. You're like, the way that I thought about stuff in the past just is not conducive for like the successful future I see for myself. And I felt like I also like coming out of being homeless, it was a humbling experience, because a lot of the pillars I had stood on prior, like my degree, the institutional names, the fellowships, the this, that, right? All of that stuff didn't matter. Nobody cares at the homeless shelter if you went to school with Stephen Curry. Nobody cares. I promise you. And so like when I was out there, you're like, okay, well, like, who am I now? Like, what is my currency? Like, what's my social currency? What's my value in this space? And so I like to say this to people all the time, like, you're that big on top of the mountain feeling that we have a lot of times, that goes away when you're outside of your bubble. You know, that's not the same when you go somewhere where you don't speak the same language. My wife, she'll be like, you know, I didn't go to college and all this. And like, you know, like, you're smart. And I'm like, yeah, but when we go to Mexico, I can't even order food. You know what I mean? But she's from Mexico. So when we go anywhere they speak Spanish, she can get us cars. She can do this. She can do that. So like my currency in that particular place, that like it's different. And so I feel like you have to be able to locate yourself. You have to be able to read the room. You have to be able to understand like, and those are strategies that I use so that I can stay like feeling positive about myself, feeling like I'm supposed to be at the table, feeling like I know like what to do next. And also just being open to opportunities and like knowing when to say yes and when to say no. So those are some strategies I use to like try to make myself at least feel like I'm staying on the path to success and like seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. And I think like you mentioned, everything's about perspective. You know, if you're doing something, I mean, you choose how you feel ultimately, you know, you know, your mindset. And like you said, like you're helping somebody move. Well, obviously you're not going to have all the time in the world with the parent. Some people never, you know their parents. So, I mean, it's just, you know, you're blessed to spend that afternoon, regardless of what you're doing, you know, potentially building a memory and remembering in one way or another. And, you know, it's tough because we live in kind of a negative society where there's a lot of victim mentality. And I don't know if it's encouraged, but it's just like, I mean, I'm from Eastern Europe. So the life that I came out of, and I was a first generation immigrant, I came here when I was 5, it's a lot harder. So I feel like when you go through these things, regardless of any part of the world or here or these experiences, you develop a thicker skin, more like a grit. You know, you have a chip on your shoulder. And I think that helps you in anything then you want to, you know, endeavor or any kind of like thing you want to start, because you can deal with situations a lot better and not crumble because you've been through all these things. I think that's like one reason where you see a lot of these startup companies, you know, unicorn companies are being founded by immigrants, you know, first generation immigrants. Their parents were immigrants from parts of the world that, you know, are war torn, they're refugees in one way or another. And they kind of have that building block of grit and things that they've experienced. And I mean, for me, it's one of those things where I kind of like, I refuse to let opportunities go, you know, kind of at the door, squander opportunities. You know, America isn't necessarily like, America has its problems like every other country, but if you've traveled across the world, there's some situations that you want to complain about America. You're thrown in those situations, like, you know, you have no prayer. You can't, you know, in terms of a socioeconomic situation, you can't get up. Like, you try to start a business, if, you know, a competitor bribes the government, you know, your business gets shut down, you get thrown in prison for no reason. You know, right now in Iran, they're protesting, you know, they're hanging people for, you know, taking off like their headdresses and speaking out about like different kind of abuses, and all over the world stuff's going on. So like, you really have to take things into perspective and be thankful and grateful for the situation you're in regardless. So it's like everything in life is a lesson or a blessing.
Yeah. It's a lot different than like Starbucks running out of oat milk.
Yeah. It's like a first world problem versus a third world problem. And I try to like take a step back and like, is this really worth getting upset about? Or like, this person honked at me. Is it really worth me getting like in a situation of like road rage and really being pissed about it? Like, who really cares at the end of the day?
And I think that like how like your happiness has a lot to do with that. You know, I'll get in moments where I'm like, people are driving, you know, really close to me or like honking, same thing. But I'm like, what I'm going to do right now is so much more exciting than the thought of having to sit here and argue with this person. You know, like the thought of me getting mad, I'm going home to write, or I'm going home to like hang out with, I'm going home to whatever it is, like, or I'm headed somewhere cool. Like, I just try to like always be thinking about what I'm doing next. I want to be present, but I also want to know, like, I have stuff coming up. So like, for me, like, it's hard to make me mad now. It's hard to get me, like, it's hard to knock me off my, you know, off my balance place, because I'm just so excited about what's going on. You know, like, I don't want to have chaos. I don't want to have drama. I don't want to have stress. So like, I try to not only not invite that to my life, I definitely cut it out if I see it as soon as possible, because chaos is like the greatest enemy of success. And someone said that, somebody famous. And it's just a quote that stuck with me for a long time, because it makes so much sense. You can't, if you're mad about the guy honking at you, you're not focused on like preparing for that podcast. You know what I mean? You're not focused on whatever the edits you have to do. You can't be, because you're worried about what you're going to call this guy, or which like umbrella or thing you're going to hit him with, you know, when you get out of the car. And it's just like, you can't, your brain can't do both those things at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that comes with time and experience and having emotional IQ and empathy, how you kind of deal with situations. Because if the littlest things phase you, like what about if something really, you know, something happens that really challenges you, how are you going to act? And I mean, it's easier said than done. Some situations I'll try to like mellow out, but some it's just like a trigger. Like you push me past the point and it's like, you know, it's hard to dial it down in a way. And usually when you're that heated, that's when the worst decisions, you know, start being made. Like, you know, if you have a collaboration, or if you're, you know, you work with somebody or you work for somebody else or yourself, and somebody sends, let's say, a passive aggressive email at that moment, you want to kind of shoot off something back that like escalates it or something passive aggressive. But if you actually like step back, take 20 minutes and kind of level out, like the reaction or the response is going to be that much better and more, you know, of a conscious decision.
Yeah. Whenever I start an email, like per our last conversation, or, you know, you start to put those passive aggressive business words in there, you're like, I should probably make another coffee, take a break, and then like return this email. So I agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah. And the other thing is like that comes into play along, you know, the way, at least for me, is ego and trying to put that aside, and, you know, imposter syndrome as well. And I think every man has an ego to a certain extent. And when they're thrown into a situation, you know, like you were, like, you know, you're in, you know, university, you're going down this path and now you're homeless. It's just like, at that moment, it's kind of hard to, you know, comprehend, like, you know, I was doing all these things that mirror, you know, having accolades and, you know, going down this path. And now I'm in this situation. And like you said, in that situation, those around you in your environment, that, you know, they don't care about any of that or anything in the past. I mean, a lot of the things, like, you know, immigrants come to the U.S., they may be doctors in their country, and then, you know, they're forced to, let's say, drive a cab or start all over again because those accreditations don't carry over here. And it's, I mean, a humbling exercise where, you know, you were a prominent, let's say, member of your society in your country, and you come here and you're like, you know, driving a cab and still happy about it and taking it not in like an offensive manner. Like, you know, this is beneath me, because a lot of the time that I've, you know, spoken to people, they put themselves on a pedestal and don't humble themselves. And like you said, take advantage of different opportunities. Like, this is beneath me. Okay, well, it's beneath you, but there could be opportunities and blessings like masked in disguise. So you don't know what any, like, you know, where something will take you, a conversation or, you know, getting a coffee with somebody. You don't know that person or what connections they have or how they can bless you or how you can collaborate. So like not taking anything for granted in that sense, I think, is key as well.
Yeah. And it's like, that's, you said so much stuff in there. I think that like the pride of that, you know, I wonder, this is a question I'm asking too, because I don't know, like, what do those people, you know, do they have a conversation with themselves where they say like, I'm not going to be a doctor in America, you know, but like, I know that I'm going to have access to these things and I'll be able to do this for my family. Like, that's probably a real conversation that they have to have. You know, I don't think, I would guess people don't come here and just find out, you know, oh, my accreditation doesn't carry over. And, you know, then be mad for however long that people here don't call them doctor like they did back at home. Like, that would just be, it just wouldn't make sense. And it does go directly back to pride and ego. And it's like how you see yourself. And like, for me, comparison is, you know, death by comparison. I live by it. You know, I'm super focused on what I'm doing. Like, what can I put out? Like, me versus me, really. Like, you have to be aware of what's going on, but like, that shouldn't like affect your process. It shouldn't affect like your art. For me, it doesn't affect my art. Like, if whatever book comes out and I'm already working on my thing, like, I'm not like, oh man, that book came out, because I already believe in what I'm doing. It would be impossible for someone else to be writing what I'm writing. You know what I mean? It would be impossible. So me being concerned with what they're doing is senseless to me. And I feel like that took a lot of ego shedding, because before you're like, oh, I used to look at other people's books and their writing or whatever, and she'd be like, you're always looking at the best, most polished version of it and comparing yourself to it. And you're like, man, how did they get so good? You know, you have no idea, but you can never figure that out while you're so focused on them, because you're not putting the time into your own craft.
Yeah. Comparison is the thief of joy. Like, that's, you know, resonating. And it's always like that. You can't enjoy you know, somewhere you reach in life, you reach a goal, and then it's like, oh, well, this person did this, you know, a lot better. Or they, like you said, you know, you wrote one book. Well, you know, this person wrote five books in that same amount of time. Like, you're taking away from your own success and not enjoying that process. Because ultimately, like, in, well, from what I've seen in my own life and then, you know, interviewing over 300 people, you know, success isn't a destination. It's the journey. You know, it's, you know, enjoying that process. And if you don't enjoy it and constantly really like, you know, I'm not doing what I need to, but you're doing something, you know what I mean? You're not being complacent. You're not kind of dying in that sense, because if you stop and plateau, ultimately, I think you're kind of taking steps back because you're not as hungry. You're not doing really anything to keep moving forward. And it doesn't matter how big that step is that you're taking. At least you're taking a step. Think about how many people aren't taking that step, or like, you know, I can't eat at this Michelin star restaurant because, you know, XYZ. Well, I mean, you have a lot of options. At least you have, you know, three meals a day, and you're not thinking about, you know, who's going to eat in your family or potentially, you know, dying from hunger. So it's just like, I mean, a lot of situations in life have humbled me, especially like I mentioned before, like traveling and really traveling and seeing how people live outside of like tourist areas, you know, what people are grateful with and other areas. And even in the US, like I try to be like out of the city. I was in Hawaii for a while, like on the North Shore of Oahu, and people are just like super laid back, grateful for things. A lot of people don't have much, but it's like they're happier than the people that have, you know, their itinerary 9 to 5 just crammed with meetings and running, you know, back and forth. Okay. You know, you're making maybe, let's say, $300,000 as a doctor, but, you know, how many hours are you working? How much student debt do you have? It's, you know, at the end of the day, it's kind of perspective of happiness.
Yeah. I think the fact that we have an attention economy hurts too, because there's no value put on the process. It's like you want to shoot the, you know, take the picture and then post it, and you want to get the like, and you get the likes immediately, you know? But like, that's not how anything else in life works. Everything else in life, there's a process, there's learning. You got to fail fast, or it might take you a long time to fail, but you got to fail eventually. And then you got to figure out, okay, once I failed, how do I recover and pivot? And there's all these things that are essential parts of learning how to make things happen. And I feel like most people, the instant gratification of just like getting recognition for whatever that thing is, the post, the video, the quick little funny clip they recorded in the car, that's good. If you're goal is to feel that satisfaction from that interaction, you're not ever going to value the process. You know, it took me a year and a half to put this book together because I had to work with an illustrator. I was editing for longer than I was writing. The book's only 56 pages. It's not even super long. But like, my process was such that like I cared entirely about what the final product looked like. And I wasn't going to speed that up just because I wanted to be able to go on Facebook and say, hey guys, I'm finally published the book. It just didn't make any sense.
Yeah. And I mean, social media is a highlight reel anyway. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, most accounts or most people you see aren't going to put the highs and the lows and everything in between. And, you know, people think it's just like an end product. So, you know, putting out a 20-30 minute episode on the podcast, like, oh yeah, that's easy. They just recorded and threw it up there. I mean, you have to edit it. You have to promote it. You have to, you know, create show notes. You have transcripts. Are you going to throw the video up anywhere? You got to chop it up. I mean, 20-30 minutes, you know, equates to maybe 4 or 5 hours on the back end. And it's like, you know, it's not easy. And like you said, if you want the finished product to be something of quality, then yeah, it's going to take all that extra time. If you just want to throw something out there, regardless of what you're doing, it just like, what do you want to be known for and remembered for, like that person of quality and putting out value, or just something kind of, you know, regurgitating, you know, chasing to be viral or anything like that?
Yeah, that's why for me, like I have a love-hate relationship with social media. I do marketing for a living. That's actually my job. You know, I do marketing ads and all kinds of stuff. But for my personal life, I always found, because I use social media for business, so like always driving something to product or, you know, advertising events, whatever the case may be. For me personally, it was hard to figure out how to use social media as just like Damien, You know what I mean? Because like I didn't have at the time, I didn't have anything to sell or promote. So it's actually become easier for me to start using social media more because like I kind of get it when you think about it, like the billboard style. You know, I was listening to some interview about Taylor Swift and they were saying that Taylor Swift doesn't like spend any time on Instagram, you know, but like her Instagram page is like just a bill. It's a running billboard, you know, and I like that. I actually like that idea. They're talking about how she's focused on like the new followers. So when they come follow her, like, what do they see? And they see the highlight reel, like you mentioned, versus like, is she on live every day talking to the people that are there, making sure they're still engaged? And it's a funny thing. You know, there's a psychology behind it. I think it depends on like, it really depends on you. Like, there's no like answer to that. Like, do people want to know all this stuff, or do they want to know what, just see what you got going on? There's no like right or wrong answer to that. But for you, like, does it make me feel better if people see me at breakfast making coffee and me telling them like, this morning I woke up with this idea and like I'm going live? Or does it just make me better to like put the idea out 3 weeks later after I've finished it and I have all this stuff put together? To me, the latter is my preferred method. But for somebody else, that's not the way to go. And there's a listener that wants to see the behind the scenes call. They want to hear you like with the messy hair and like the coffee and like, you know, they want to see that. So those people will find those people. And I think that like, it's just being okay with being authentically yourself and like not wanting everybody to like you. You know, I don't need everybody to like me or my book or my work. But for me, like that's why I think when you make stuff from a place of like healing, like this book, it's for you. So if people want to spend, you know, if people want to feel those feelings and feel the empathy, and if they want to commiserate some of that achievement with you, then great. But like, if not, that's okay as well. Just remember that the feeling of success came when I received it in my hand the first time, when I saw it in real life. You know, that was the feeling of success, not whether or not people share the post, not whether or not people actually buy the book, not whether or not people come and get their book signed. None of that. That's not the success for me. The success is actually making the idea real.
I agree. So what do you hope for somebody that reads the book to get out of it? Like one thing they can get out of it. And if you had like a specific person that it would probably be tailored to, who would that be?
Yeah, I think it would be tailored to people who are questioning some of like life's big questions, you know, whether that be like just personal, like, am I in the right place? Am I doing the right thing? Am I around the right people? It'd also be for people who are like going through any spiritual like questions, you know, like the, is there a God or is there no God question? Is there like, am I doing all this by myself or am I not doing this all by myself? People who have like dealt with parent issues. I come from a single mom, mother household. I had daddy issues, you know what I mean? And so like part of that, some of that gets teased out in my poetry. So for me, the book was like, it's called I Made a Place for You because I was carving out space to talk about things I didn't really know where else to. I didn't have like the people I could just call on the phone. I lost a lot of my mainstay friends, you know, from like during my time being on the streets. I just disconnected from them and never reconnected. So all of my outlets for getting those kind of like thoughts, you know, playing ping pong with the thoughts, like I didn't have any of those. So for me, this book was that. So I would say anyone who's like going through any kind of questioning time in their life. And so I would say that that's most people. You know, the poems are really short and the illustrations complement the poems to the point where it's like, even if you don't really want to read all of the poetry, flipping through the books will just like get your mind, you know, flipping through the book and looking at the illustrations will get your mind running because there's like, there are little nuggets in there. I wanted to make it a visual experience as well as like just a written experience. So like the poems and the illustrations are in symmetry to each other. So like it just adds another like layer of depth to the book. But I think it's really great for like anybody who's going through stuff. Like if you're going through stuff, I'd say pick it up and read a few poems and you'll find something in there because I wrote it from that place where I wanted to expunge everything that was sitting inside of me and get it out. So if anyone has any of those things inside of them, then it's probably likely that something I said will resonate.
So what's one piece of advice you could leave with the audience, personal or professional?
I would say do today what you should do today, you know, so don't save whatever else, you know, don't procrastinate. It's age old advice, but for me, I feel like it's one of those simple things that like people should hear. And I should hear every day. Because I often find myself, it's so easy to that moment where I'm like, hey, I should go do the dishes, you know? And then your brain's like, yeah, but the other episode of White Lotus just came out and you should watch the episode, you know, you should watch Netflix. And you have to be able to tell your brain, hey, like, I got to accomplish this thing. I got to do this thing. I should do this thing now. And then I can, you know, and for me, it's just like, that's the key is I think procrastination is, to me, I've decided that it's a disappointment to me. Like when I procrastinate, I feel disappointed now. Like I knew that I could have got the thing done and I don't. So later I'm like, man, that's disappointing. Like why? And if you do that enough times, like scolding yourself, you know how parents used to, but if you do that to yourself enough times, you get tired of like, you feel weird. You're like, who, like, what am I doing? You know, you start, because you become your own, like kind of like police in a sense, your own internal, like moral compass and like internal, like accountability system. And so I use that to like keep myself on track.
Yeah. I do the same thing, and it's kind of like, you kind of, me personally are kind of harder on yourself and you always regret it. You know, sometimes I don't know if it's, procrastinating as a habit and then waiting till the last minute that I think I perform the best, like, you know, under pressure, like, you know, you have to write 20 pages and it's due tomorrow and you have 8 hours to do it. So it's either you write it and it's awesome or potentially like, you know, good, or you fail and you have no other option. It's like life or death kind of thing. And at times, yeah, it's good, but it puts a lot of unneeded pressure and stress on a person.
And like, I know you said you've done the 300 or more interviews. So I don't know if you still have this feeling that I'm going to describe, but I still get nervous. Like I haven't done nearly that many, obviously, but like I get this nervous feeling, and like I had to realize that nervous feeling doesn't mean that you should cancel the interview. That nervous feeling doesn't mean like you're not supposed to do it. That nervous feeling just comes along with the fact that you care. Like I care about this. And so I feel like most of the time where our fight or flight response says retreat from the thing that's making us nervous, but instead like we should really forge ahead. So every time I get on the podcast, like right now I feel super good, you know, to be talking to you. But if you would have talked to me an hour and a half ago, I didn't feel as good. I felt like I'm a little nervous. I don't know how it's going to go. You know, you just have all the like the negative Nancy thoughts that just pop around in your mind. They're just jumping around in there. But I think that just gets back to the same thing. Like I couldn't procrastinate. I couldn't call you and say, hey, let's do this tomorrow because I feel nervous. So we have to like, I have to buckle down and like know that I care about this. So you have to perform. You have to make sure that you're clear and you're getting your message across. And I think that there's a pressure that you put on yourself that we're used to other people putting on us. When you're at your job, like your boss is like, hey, need a thing by Friday. And you know, he puts that pressure on you, or I need you to revise this. And like, this is not up to standards. And like, he puts the pressure on you, or she puts the pressure on you. But for stuff that's dealing with you, there's no person that's going to do that besides yourself.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
yeah, I think that little bit of nervousness is good. Like you said, it shows that you care and it kind of keeps you accountable in a way. I mean, I've recorded, well, at this point, there's like 315 live. So, close to 330 interviews on my show. And then, like I said, on other shows and different publications, like 150 or so. So that's almost 500-ish. Even that, you know, like you said, it's, you know, you want to do your best. What would people think of you? Like you're, people are always super self-critical of themselves. So lately, like I analyze how I'm talking and I'm like, I'm kind of slurring what I'm saying. Did I have like a mild stroke or something? Like what am I sounding like? I hate the sound of my voice, but it's just like, you know, getting your information out there, regardless of like, you know, what you think about yourself, it has value and you can theoretically think about it. Like you can impact one person by doing this or, you know, somebody getting value and, you know, it's a worthwhile endeavor.
Especially when it's something that you like, this is so easy to do, you know, like talking, it's not like we had to like fly and I had to meet you somewhere and we had to like have a bunch of people with us. Like it's super easy just to hop on a call and talk. And I feel like since it's so easy, we should just be using the platform the best way that we can. And it's funny, I'll give you an example, just like how I was self-critical of myself, because like I'm looking at your background, like your background's awesome. It's, I mean, like you could tell, like you framed it very nicely. And like one of my early podcasts, so, you know, one of the comments was like, hey, you should probably like frame your background up. And I was like, man, I'm gonna have to cancel all my podcasts that I have coming up before I get a chance to. But then like, that's a weird thing to tell yourself, right? Like that, I could have internalized that and said, I don't have a story anymore because I don't have stuff on my wall. Right. And that's not the case. I still have a story. It's just like, I'll add stuff to the wall when I get a chance to. And I think that like, those are conversations that people can't shy away from. And I welcome those conversations. You know, I appreciate the feedback. And I was like, and I had that little reckoning, you know, reconciliation in my brain. Like, no, like the story is way more important. And then when I put a painting back there or something, or hang a sheet or something back there, eventually that'll be cool. But like right now, I want to do this because I have stuff to say, and I care about like my book, and I care about the fact that there are other people who will listen to me talk about these issues. So that's just, I wanted to give you an actual example of something you just mentioned. I'm like, I literally went through that a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I agree. So I really appreciate you stopping by today. Can you let the audience know how they can find you or anything else you have going on?
Absolutely. I have an author website. It's DamianWhiteWrites.com, DamianWhiteWrites. And you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, at Damian K. White. That's my handle.
Awesome. Thanks again for stopping by.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Good.
This podcast has been brought to you by Nova Zora Digital. Find out how Nova Zora Digital can help your company grow online. Learn more at NovaZoraDigital.com. Until next time, all you digital savages.